Evening, everyone. Thank you for joining us tonight for the March 30th, 2015 meeting of the Measure 91 Joint Implementation Committee. We really appreciate that you're here. We have a whole lot of people signed up to offer testimony today, and for that, we're really thankful and appreciative. And before we kick it off, I'd like to note that, you know, if my email is any indication, I know that there are some people who feel excited about the direction that we're headed, and there are some people who feel really concerned about one or more provisions in one or both of the bills, and we're glad you're here. Because this committee is unified in that we believe in hearing from you and getting your feedback, and we're just trying to do a good job with the job we've been given by our leadership of trying to implement Measure 91, and part of that means hearing your feedback. And so we put a couple bills forward, even though it's early in the process, and we know that they haven't been fully socialized and vetted and refined because you're part of that process. So you may be happy, you may be frustrated, you may be anxious, but we're glad you're here, and we want to hear from you. Since we have quite a number of people, we're going to encourage people to stick with 3 minutes apiece so everyone gets a chance to speak within a reasonable amount of time. I'm going to, before we turn it over, well, the next thing that's going to happen is I'm going to offer my colleague, co-chair Jenny Burdick, a chance to give some framing thoughts. Then we're going to invite Mark Mayer, who is the legislative councilman who drafted both of the bills, Senate Bill 936 and House Bill 3400, to describe in his words what he sees as the key differences. And then after that, because I think that might be helpful framing for everyone, and then we'll open it up to public testimony. So first, Co-Chair Burdick, would you like to add anything?
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I just found out that I will be testifying, so I'll save my remarks for my testimony.
Great. And Senator Przanski.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I'm not sure how many people. I know there's a lot of people out there. I heard that you're going to do 3 minutes. Not knowing what the length is, I'm wondering if you would want to consider we're going to be doing 2 minutes for a hearing in 2 days just to get more people before us.
Well, that's a good point. I think that's a good idea. So open to input as we are. We would like to probably tweak that down to 2 minutes.
Give more people.
Yeah, thank you. That gives more people a chance to testify. And with that, I'm going to open the public hearing on both bills simultaneously. So we're going to open a public hearing on House Bill 3400 and Senate Bill 936 and begin by inviting Mark Mayer to come forward and offer his description of the differences between the bills, and we'll ask the two proponents to introduce their bills and then open it for testimony.
Chair Burdick, Chair Leininger, my name is Mark Mayer, Deputy Legislative Counsel. My drafting areas are public health, marijuana, and energy law. I drafted both Senate Bill 936 and House Bill 3400, and I was asked to briefly testify as to the differences between the two bills. Before I begin on my testimony of the differences, it might be helpful for those here today to testify on them to understand that there are other components of the bills that are related to purely legal changes that were brought forth from the implementation of the dispensary statute, as well as in order to make some of the law enforcement provisions, some of the legal provisions that are currently under OMMA work with a world in which marijuana is legal. So there's a lot of that stuff in these two bills as well. However, I'm here to just talk about the differences between them, hopefully in order to help frame the discussion. It would be helpful to probably look at the two biggest differences between these two bills. And I think that House Bill 3400, the most substantial difference between that and 936, is that House Bill 3400 has a dual licensure provision that allows a medical marijuana grower to occupy the same premises as a producer or processor licensed under Measure 91. The language does specify that the product has to be kept separate, but it does allow for that if they want to be duly licensed. Along with that, House Bill 3400 also contains language that directs OLCC to administer the dispensary program, not other components of the Oregon Medical Marijuana Act, but the dispensary program through a memorandum of understanding with OHA. And it contains all the conforming amendments along with that. So that's the biggest component of 3400 that's not present in 936. The biggest component of 936 that is not present in 3400 is that it establishes additional registration and safety standard requirements for processors. And the way we wrote that is it's not a new type of registration. It's if you're a medical marijuana grower and you want to process marijuana into marijuana products, then you have to get an additional registration and you will be subject to more stringent safety standards for the production of those products. It also includes some language with regard to dispensaries for rulemaking, for more oversight over the processing of products at dispensaries as well. So that is the major component of 936 that isn't in 3400. Real briefly, I should probably talk about what most of the discussion has been about, which is about the limits, the grow limits. And in Senate Bill 936, that provision is in Section 16. In House Bill 3400, that provision is in... Just a minute. Section 13. A lot of attention has been paid to the limit that each bill places on what you can own in the way of mature plants at a single grow site. So 3400 has in non-urban, non-residential areas a cap of 48 plants, and Senate Bill 936 has the cap for that amount at 24. In both bills, if it's an urban setting, residentially zoned, the cap is at 12. House Bill 3400 also takes out the correlating cap on the amount of product that you're harvesting from the plants, as well as the correlating cap on immature plants. Underneath Senate Bill 936, the correlating amounts remain at the existing ratio. So those are the differences between the way that the two things can be possessed. Underneath both, there is still a cap where you are concurrently owning only six plants along with a patient or a caregiver. So that stays the same. The main difference is what the cap is for each type of product at the grow site, whether it's the dried leaves and bud or the mature plants or the immature plants. So that's the important thing to remember there. Only a few other distinctions I should point out at this time. 3400 contains what I'm going to call, for lack of a better term right now, some patient rights provisions. For instance, I won't go into all these. There's about five of them. But for instance, one caps the registration fee for a veteran who has post-traumatic stress disorder at $20 for getting a registry identification card for medical marijuana use. That's an example. 3400 also explicitly removes seeds from Department of Agriculture governance, and 3400 contains preemption language with respect to taxation. 936 doesn't contain any of those provisions. 936 also contains specific language allowing OHA to investigate grow sites and processing sites. I think that those are probably the major differences between the two bills. So with that, if there are any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Okay. I think in the interest of trying to move forward with as much public testimony as we can, we'll thank you for that and for all your great work. You've worked extremely hard on all this bill drafting, and we appreciate it. All right. So next we will have Representative Buckley and Co-Chair Burdick to testify in support of their bills, to describe the bills. So thank you for your work developing those and for testifying today.
Madam Co-Chair, Member of the Committee, the Senator tells me to go first, and of course I always adhere to what the Senate advises me to do. Co-Chair, Members of the Committee, I'm Representative Peter Buckley, representing South Jackson County and Legislature. I appreciate for your time and consideration House Bill 3400. I appreciate Legislative Council Mark Mayer's work on this and his description of both these bills. I think what we're trying to do with both these bills is try to find what that balance is to make sure that the medical marijuana program can still serve patients, but also address the concerns about excess marijuana ending up in the black market. How do we have a system that is smart, that's safe, that's effective, and it works primarily for patients first and foremost? So with House Bill 3400, what we try to do is take to listen to a lot of different ideas between people who have a sincere desire to keep the patient-grower relationship and have a discussion about how that might evolve to the next level, given that we have dispensaries now, given that there is going to be recreational marijuana available now as well. How do we keep that patient-grower relationship intact for those that's very important for them to receive the marijuana that works for their ailments? So we tried to find that kind of a ground where a grower could decide to grow a certain number of plants in order to maintain the relationship with their patients, but as a kind of trade-off for staying underneath a cap of the number of plants, they'd be allowed to store more of their marijuana that they harvest in order to serve their patients. And the other side of that was that they would participate in some sort of tracking system so that there would be a record of the number of plants they grow, what they harvest from those plants, and where that marijuana is going. So that was the basic approach, try to say, as we try to protect the medical marijuana program, as we try to protect the patient's ability to access growers, since if that is their preference, we set up a system that can work for the patient, for the grower, and for the desire to make sure that we're tracking marijuana effectively and diminishing any marijuana that goes into the black market. Let's say Council went through a lot of the provisions, the differences between the two bills, and I would say that I look forward to working with the committee and working with people involved in the medical marijuana community to evolve these bills to get to a point where people can feel secure that patients do have the rights and the access they need to make sure that we have a medical marijuana system that continues to provide the medicine that people need and do it in a way that's balanced out, that does set a kind of guideline to where the line is between the medical program and then crossing into the more heavily regulated OLCC recreational marijuana program. So again, this is an attempt at a kind of compromise position that can, again, put patients at the forefront and can a system that can work for growers with not being too overly regulated, but actually have enough structure behind it that people have confidence in. And with that, I'll let the rest of the people who want to testify, and I thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Ginny Burdick. I represent the people of Senate District 18, which is Southwest Portland and parts of Washington County. I want to, first of all, commend not just Mark Mayer, but my colleague here, Representative Buckley, for his work. He's been working on this for many, many more months than I have. My goal here is was reflected very well in some of Representative Buckley's comments, which was two objectives: to preserve the grower-patient relationship as we move to a recreational market. There's been a lot of fear. There was fear during the campaign and after the campaign that the recreational markets may somehow sweep out the interests of the medical patients, some of whom have extremely compelling stories depend heavily on the medicine they're able to get through the medical marijuana program. The other main objective is to close off the black market for two reasons. One, the black market will compete with our recreational market, and I want to see Oregon have a successful recreational market. And number two, we are in jeopardy, serious jeopardy, from the federal government if we can't show that we are keeping marijuana from getting into the black market, especially across state lines. So with those two objectives in mind, with a lot of help, including from Representative Buckley, we put together Senate Bill 936, which basically will create a closed system. My bill, our bill, we have a number of sponsors on this, will establish a limit of 24 plants. Representative Buckley establishes a limit of 48 plants. I suspect we'll settle for something within that range. I'm not really wedded to necessarily the number of plants within that range. What I am wedded to is to have a closed system where the medical growers can maintain their relationships with their clients, with their patients, and that the medical growers will have easy access to medical dispensaries for their excess product. And in exchange for being in that closed system, they will have a lighter tracking system. It will not be as heavily regulated as the OLCC grows. And I'm hoping, after talking to some of the medical growers, I was impressed by their commitment to their patients and their sincere desire not to have these changes that we're making in the medical marijuana, in the marijuana area in general, not interfere with their relationships with their patients. One grower told me that she drives up from Southern Oregon to Portland to deliver medical marijuana to one of her patients. We don't want to interfere with that. This is the attempt to try to achieve that in a way that will also stem the flow into the black market and allow our recreational market to flourish. I want to say I was kind of surprised and a little upset by some of the emails, because clearly patients out there have been getting a different message, and I regret that. I think it's not a service to the patients out here who are very fearful about losing their access to something that is demonstrably improving their quality of life. And I don't think it's fair to try to get people like that all fired up and all scared when they shouldn't be. Our objective is just the opposite. Our objective is to preserve what they already have, and I'm very committed to that, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Senator Fairley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess I want to talk about an open secret, sort of an elephant in the room, although it could be a donkey. It doesn't have to be an elephant. If I believe, or if I operate on the assumption that 75% of the product entering the illicit market is diverted from the medical market, and it, you know, that hasn't been proven, it's just something that we've heard during our hearings, that there was a pretty powerful economic incentive to maintain the medical program. And if growers who are currently wanting to convert from the medical grows to the recreational grows are doing so because they believe this is an opportunity to enter a legitimate business that will grow and be sustainable in Oregon, it seems to me that there's a powerful economic incentive to migrate people from the medical side to the recreational side. So are we considering any provisions to assure that there will be medical supplies available to folks if their growers do make that transition into recreational? You know, are we thinking about an obligation that gets placed on the growers or the medical facilities or even on the recreational side that makes a sufficient, safe, reliable supply of medical product available to all those that have cards?
Madam Chair, Senator Farioli, this is something that I've devoted a lot of thought to. After talking to a lot of medical growers, I'm convinced that enough of them will decide to go into this medical-only system to supply the system. If they don't, this is a licensed activity, and a license condition can be anything you want it to be. And I think if we all agree that a priority is making sure that there is enough supply for medical patients, then we can make that happen. This is going to be an ongoing conversation. And if these licenses that are going to be issued by OLCC are going to be tremendously valuable, and they can have conditions put on them if that's necessary. I don't think it will be from the people I've talked to. I think there are enough people out there, enough growers out there who want to stay doing exactly what they're doing, serving their patients. But if that doesn't prove to be the case, we have options, and I would intend to exercise them.
Madam Chair, just a little follow-up, if I could.
Okay.
I've had really interesting and, I think, fruitful conversations with growers and with the folks that are engaged in the dispensaries. And I think what would be beneficial is to simply invite them to try to create a structure that, a voluntary structure that they would implement to make sure that folks who show up at dispensaries have access to the quality and kind and quantity of products that they need as long as those folks have a valid card. So, you know, we've heard a lot of information about the altruism of folks that are currently engaged, and I think some of those stories are quite heartwarming, but I think the powerful economic incentives that are going to be in the recreational market caused us to ask the question, how will we maintain access for the marijuana that's needed by medical users, and isn't it proper for us to invite the growers, to invite the dispensaries, and to invite the processors to participate in some voluntary program, mm-hmm. and see whether or not that might meet the needs. Thank you, ma'am.
Madam Chair, Senator Farioli, I think there's a great line of thought. What we try to do with House Bill 3400, we worked with growers, we worked with dispensary owners. We had Mark Mayer was generous enough with his time. He met with anybody and everybody who we asked him to sit and talk with in trying to design this. And the idea we were going behind was, can there be an incentive? Can there be an incentive for someone to stick with the medical marijuana program? And part of the incentive that we're proposing is that they could grow 48 plants for the medical marijuana program, but they could also grow plants over 48 to whatever, they could grow for the recreational side too. So there'd be basically on the same property, they could grow for the recreation side, they could grow for the medical side. The incentive on the medical marijuana grower, if they want to just stick with the medical marijuana program, would be the lighter reporting methods that they'd have to go through in order to simply just grow for patients and dispensaries. That would be the incentive for them. They'd still have they'd be protected under the law, under this kind of smaller cap of plants, but they would have a lighter reporting system, and they could basically continue their way of life if that way of life is what was attractive to them to being in the program.
Great. Thank you. You know, unless others on the committee have a burning question, we'll thank our two chief co-sponsors or chief sponsors and move forward with community testimony. All right, we have a good tradition in this legislature of inviting people who've traveled from over 100 miles to testify first to make sure that we can get them in for sure. And so I have a few people whose names are highlighted as having come from over 100 miles away, and I'm going to call them first. So in our first panel, if we could please have John Sajo.
Sajo.
Shane Christian and Gina Erdman. That'd be great.
Madam Co-Chair, if you want to maybe announce who the next three are so they can
good
be...
Good suggestion. And up. Then the next on deck, we have Rob Pendle, Kelly Kavdel, Jeremy Quitt, and Eddie Lepp. So...
First three.
Anybody?
How many rooms we're using?
Because they're going to be coming from the other room.
All right. How about of the second group of folks... We got Rob Pendle. No,
they'll come in.
They're on their way. All right. Hi, welcome.
There you go. Just takes a while.
So we are inviting to come to the witness table now John Sajo, Gina Erdman, and Shane Christian. Welcome. So, what we would love to have you do is keep your comments under 2 minutes if possible and begin by stating your name for the record. Thank you.
My name is John Sajo. I'm from Dillard, Oregon, and I'm the director of the recently formed Umpqua Cannabis Association. I've been an activist advocating for legalizing marijuana since the early 80s, so this has been a long road for me. And I guess part of what we always used to say is, well, we'll leave that detail to the legislators, and here we are. And I've been following this closely on the Internet, and I have to say that the work you're doing and the bipartisan problem-solving that you're applying here is noteworthy and commendable, and hopefully some folks in Washington, D.C. will get wind of some of this. As far as the bills in question and the sentiment expressed, we all agree with that, and as one of the people who advised the drafters of Measure 91, one of the things that was very important was that we leave medical marijuana alone. And I think we're all talking about this supply for patients and, you know, how do we merge medical with the rec stores and all that. And one thing I think is missing in that is more discussion needs to happen about merging medical marijuana with the rest of the established healthcare system and figure out how we, you know, we've created a system over the last 15 years where the healthcare of some of the poorest, sickest Oregonians is subsidized by marijuana farmers instead of the Oregon Health Plan. And I think we need to change that. And I think there's a lot of elements to that. We need research into proper dosing so doctors can know what to tell their patients to use. So I hope we get to that. Try to rush through this because 2 minutes goes by quick. As far as the elephant in the room, you know, we're all talking about tracking here. And tracking is just not going to do what anybody says. And tracking on these little tiny gardens, I think, is unwarranted government intrusion into, you know, patients and people that are helping them to private lives. We're all for tracking at the large scale, but tracking individual growers will never work. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Hello, my name is Shane Christen. I'm on the board of directors of the Oregon Sun Growers Guild. Thank you for this opportunity to speak. Thank you, Madam Chairs, and the rest of these dignified people for coming forth and sitting and listening to us. There's a quote on the building, "The mind of man knows no employment more worthy than the power, than the quest of righteousness." I'd like to speak to one particular bill, the 936, if I'm correct. I'm a seed grower. I put myself at odds with some of the laws trying to get the best strain that I can use for my patients. There's one bill that cuts me down to 2 seeds per hole. That really limits my chances. Honestly, I need 5 to 6 to get the best plant selection. And of those that I don't use, the males, I'd like to be able to grow those out and collect the pollen without being an outlaw. I think I'll just use this much time. Thank you.
Thanks very much.
Good evening, Madam Co-Chairs, the rest of the committee. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to testify today. My name is Gina Erdman. I live in Williams, Oregon. I am the director of Oregon Sun Grown Growers Guild. I'm here to share the story of one of my patients. He just turned 18 in August, and he has suffered severe brain trauma from infancy. And around 7 to 9 months old, he clocked as many as 160 seizures in one day. He has exceeded his life expectancy, and he is able to walk and talk and attend school, which is something doctors said he would never be able to do. His caregiver is his grandmother. They are the people that are the most vulnerable. If I had to cut plants, they would not be able to afford the medicine that we give them. They would be, if they had to buy the raw matter in a dispensary, it would cost them about $2,000 a month. He needs a gram of concentrate oil that he produces from the high CBD plants that I grow. And they will be able to use all of the six plants, if not more. Whatever I could produce, they will use. He needs about a gram a day because of his body weight. We have the records she has taken, and he is down to 11 days seizure-free from this medicine. They couldn't find high CBD medicine in the dispensary near where they live. We had to search for those specific plants. We grew them chemical-free, because this young man has already been subject to many chemicals in his short life. We grew them chemical-free, pesticide-free, harvested them, and paid for their testing, and delivered it to them for free, never asking them for anything in return. And I just wanted to share that story with you. Thank you.
Thank you all very much. And I know you've traveled a long way, and it's not easy to come testify in front of this committee. And I just want to thank you and everyone who's taken the leap of faith to bring your personal stories and your patient stories to us. So thank you.
Welcome. Thank you.
All right. So next up, we have Rob Pendel, Kelly Caudill, Jeremy Quitt, and Eddie Lepp. And then on deck, we have Ryan Krellwitz, Kimberly McCullough, and Jeff Sugarman.
Hello, my name is Rob Pendel. I'm from Applegate, Oregon. I'm a member of the Southern Oregon Sun Grown Growers Guild. Thank you. I want to thank the committee for being open and listening to us. First of all, I want to say that us farmers down in Southern Oregon are basically small family farms who have been doing this for, you know, a number of years, and we'd like to continue to be able to serve our patients and basically make a modest living for ourselves doing that, serving our patients. In both of the bills that have been presented here, plant numbers have been discussed and plant limits have been discussed. I think that a better way to maybe look at this is not so much as plant numbers, but as patients, number of patients served. And I think that as growers and farmers in this industry, we should be able to serve as many patients as we're able with our farm and within the zoning requirements or zoning limitations that the committee decides to place for where we happen to be. Basic tracking of our product in our farm is fine. We don't have any problem with tracking and reporting what we're doing to the committee, to the OHA. That's fine. We want to be in compliance. We want to be able to be legal and still serve our patients. This is really what our concern is about, is are the patients being conserved? Thank you. Lastly, we want to be able to make sure we have access to dispensaries. Again, we think it's fair that we should be able to make a modest living doing what we do. As a property owner, I know that one of the things that I do with the properties that I have is I rent sections of my property to medical growers so that each one can have their own little section of farm. So plant numbers on a tax lot would be very detrimental to myself and others like me. And the last, very last thing is, according to Huffington Post, 2 weeks ago, the U.S. Congress passed a bill legalizing medical marijuana nationwide, which is, means there's only one step for the Department of Transportation signing off and being able to distribute medical marijuana now nationwide. So,
so much for your testimony. And I appreciate so much your testimony. I also want to remind people that these microphones are quite sensitive, so you can actually stay back, say, 6 inches, and we'll be able to hear you well, and it won't distort your voice. So, but whatever works for you is will make work for us.
Hello, I'm Jeremy Quitt, and I operate Bloom Well, which is a community agency in Bend, Oregon, that provides safe access to cannabis in a judgment-free environment. I mean every word of that statement. We are a community agency, meaning we bring in cultivators and their excess medicine. We are not an integrated dispensary. So since I've been open over a year now, we've been licensed and we've just renewed our license. We've worked with hundreds of cultivators who are bringing in excess medicine for our patients, and we've been working with thousands of patients. So I'm here to represent the voice of the patients that we've seen in Central Oregon over the last year, as well as the cultivators that I've met with in Central Oregon and around the state that have brought us their product. My concern about plant limits is that it puts patients in jeopardy from having enough access to their medicine, and it also holds patients hostage to this perceived fear of black market diversion. My sense that when all adults come July will be able to cultivate 4 plants in their home, we are going to have the opportunity for anybody to drop cannabis in the mail and ship it out of state. So limiting the number of plants or the number of patients that you can have on a grow site doesn't solve the problem of diversion into the black market. Those operators who want to work in the black market will find a way to work in the black market. A lot of folks have come into my facility. We talk about how they can get their product into the regulated supply system, and it becomes apparent who wants to work in the regulated supply system and who doesn't. The concern about plant limits and patient limits at grow sites, I think, creates unintended consequences and actually introduces market externalities into the medical system when the goal of good governance is to minimize or renew or remove those market externalities. It builds inefficiencies in the modes of production. Cannabis is perishable, it's heterogeneous, and people need a fresh supply of a variety of cannabis, and the notion that you can produce mega plants and that product can be successfully stored all year for patients, I think, is unrealistic.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chairs and the Legislative Committee. My name is Kelly Cadell. I'm on the Board of Directors of OSGG, Oregon Sun-Grown Growers Guild. And you asked for comments about if we liked one bill or the other. And I wasn't able to write down if I liked one or the other better. I liked a little bit of SB 936, and I liked a little bit of the HB 3400 for different reasons. But these two bills are going to disenfranchise our patients, about 11,000, 12,000 of them, by limiting them so much, taking away their growers. So I think it's important that we continue to help out our patients, you know, the best we can, and be able to supply the medicine to them when we can. So on the other thing I'd like to talk about is about the growers being able to go to market in a regulated way. It's important. I know you guys want to curb the unregulated market, but the growers are putting out, you know, their time and effort into growing this medicine, and then they need the resources to be able to continue to do that. The patient isn't able to compensate the grower all that well, just for the soil and for the utilities. Well, we're outdoor growers, so we don't have any real utilities. We don't do it indoor, and then a lot of people do grow outdoor, and I think I really appreciate you guys' time on this and help, you know, listening to us the way you have and inviting us to talk to you about these things. And just want to say thank you to each and every one of you.
Thank you. I'd like to clarify before our next panel comes up. So we had Jeremy, did we have Eddie just now come up? No? Is Eddie Lepp in the area? Okay, Mr. Lepp. So next panel then will be Mr. Lepp and then Ryan Krelwitz, Kimberly McCullough, and Jeff Sugarman. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Really have two main things I want to say. One,
name.
You have to realize that.
Excuse me, if you could introduce yourself for the record first, that'd be great. Thanks.
My name is Eddie Lepp. There's two basic things. One, a lot of these patients that are sick and really need the medicine the most are not in a position to grow their own, a lot of them. And so you have growers who may have a property, may have southern exposure, maybe in a position where they can dedicate that time in their lives to doing that. And those people should be able to supply as many patients as they need. If you're looking at this bill as what's best for the patients, I think it's a no-brainer. I think that a lot of patients are going to be have a major issue trying to get it from dispensaries. They don't know what nutrients were used. There are a lot of synthetics out on the market, a lot of strains of cannabis. The two most important ones I would say right now are AC/DC and Charlotte's Web, extremely low yielders. You can grow a huge plant that might look like it would produce 4 or 5 pounds and get a quarter of a pound. Right now, these are the highest percentage CBD strains, very low percentage THC. And this is what I'm growing for my patients and works well for them. If you cut these numbers back, I'm going to have a really hard time supplying what they need, being able to afford to do it. And I just wish people could just take a look at that, that the people aren't in a position to do it. Sorry, I forgot my other point that I wanted to tell you. Oh, yeah, if you want to curb the black market, let's look at the rec, let's be realistic, and let's allow people to make money. The OLC needs to make money. The growers, it needs to work for them. Let's meet in the middle. None of this overregulation. The tracking is absolutely insane. Within reason, I think everyone's okay with it. People want to pay taxes, and they want to support their state. And I think everybody wants it to happen, but it has to be met in the middle. So, good luck.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Co-chairs and members of the committee, my name is Kimberly McCullough, and I'm here on behalf of the ACLU of Oregon. I have just a few things about both of these bills that I wanted to point out that are of a bit of concern. In SB 936 on page 15, there's a requirement of a database, the database that's going to track all of this information. And it says that at a minimum, it will contain the information contained in section 7 through 12. If you look at section 7, that relates to the tracking for growers, and it tracks everything, including the amount transferred to each patient. If you look at sections 11 and 12, it's similar, but that has to do with processors. And again, it has how much was transferred to each patient. And so my concern is that this database is containing the patient information and how much the patients are getting. And I'm just concerned about patient privacy here and the fact that we're creating, we have this database, and as far as I can see, there's not too much in the way of explaining who has access to the database, what the restrictions are on the database. And in addition, there's a section on page 22, section 29, that talks about how information essentially that's in these other sections, that's required in other sections to be gathered into this database, that any personally identifiable information other than a name submitted with an application under 475.314 or section 11 is confidential and not subject to public disclosure. Well, if it's including names and names are required to be in this database, and names are required in these applications. What I'm reading here is that the names of patients are subject to public records requests, and so I think this is something that just needs to be looked at and taken care of. There's analogous sections in HB 3400, section 4 on page 5, section 20 on page 18, and then section 20 on page 18. They're basically mirror those. So I just want to draw your attention to that, and hopefully that can just be reworked a little.
Thank you. And we're moving people through quickly tonight, but hopefully we'll have a chance to revisit some of those specific comments in written testimony or later. Thank you so much.
Co-Chair Leininger, Co-Chair Burdick, members of the committee, my name is Jeff Sugarman. I represent the Oregon Cannabis PAC. In 1998, I had a great honor to be able to run the campaign for the effort to pass medical marijuana in Oregon. Some of the people sitting here today, both on the dais and in the audience, were part of that historic effort. And I wanted to just spend a minute or two recounting some of the history of this law. I think it will be helpful in determining how we go and what direction we go. In 1999, we spent, 15 or 20 of us spent 3 or 4 days a week, several hours at a time, working in the legislature to do the implementation work necessary to get to pass the medical marijuana law and get it implemented into law. In 2005, that original law allowed for 3 plants and 3 ounces of usable marijuana. It really was designed as a defense from prosecution rather than any kind of commercial statute or some kind of business entity. In 2005, the legislature passed a bill that did several things. It changed the affirmative defense language. It created a new grower's card. It increased plant limits from 3 plants to 6 plants and allowed for 18 immature plants. It allowed for possession of up to 24 ounces per patient from the original level of 3, and it allowed growers to serve up to 4 patients. Almost immediately, an entire industry built up around that program now. Clinics serving thousands of patients a year, growers and processors working to fill the needs of patients, and we saw the emergence of dispensaries, and in some cases, we saw people using this program as cover to feed the black market in other states. In 2013, when we regulated dispensaries, we took a step of bringing those under control. In 2014, 2 other historic events occurred, the Cole Memo and the passage of Measure 91. We understand that this legislature has a really difficult job ahead of it, trying to bring all of these different components together in a way that ensures all patients have access to the medicine they need, and that the adult use market is well regulated and controlled and responds affirmatively to the points outlined in the Cole Memo, and we stand ready to help you in any way we can, and we thank you for your time.
Thank you so much, all three of you. Really appreciate it. All right, so next up, we're going to ask Peter Gendron, who is here from Josephine County, Russ Belleville, Gabe Ariola, and Braxton Creel to come forward. On deck, we have Megan Wallstadter, Rob Bovet, and Scott Winkles, and Janice Patton. Thank you so much. I think, do we have only 3 chairs? Okay, so Peter, let's have you come up the next panel. I apologize for that. So we're going 3 at a time, turns out. Please begin by introducing yourself for the record, and we look forward to hearing from you.
Good evening, Madam Co-Chairs and committee members. Thank you for this opportunity. My name is Braxton Creel. I am a representative of the Stormy Ray Cardholders Foundation and the Cannalogics Foundation. I'm here today to plead with this committee to reconsider the bills HB 3400 and SB 936 on behalf of every Oregon medical marijuana patient that relies on free medicine from their growers. As a facilitator as well as a provider of medical cannabis for patients that are truly in need, and each and every one of our patients fall into the low-income category, like the remaining 40% of the OMMP program, I make full extract cannabis oil for the most extreme cases that require more than most growers are willing to provide for free. It is through my alliance with growers in residential areas that care for multiple patients, larger patient-focused grows, and grow sites that have 3 or 4 more growers on them that actually produce excess, that I am able to provide these patients with oils that limit their seizures, lower their intracranial hypertension, and treat their cancers. If either of these bills pass, not just my patients and the patients that rely on the Stormy Ray Cardholders Foundation and Canalogics will suffer. All of the OMMP patients will suffer, and it will force thousands into the dispensaries and cut their access to medicine in half, if not through the cost alone, through the transportation burden that we eliminate in our service to them. I urge each and every member of this committee to reconsider these bills and maintain the true vision of the Oregon Medical Marijuana Program and protect the patients that proudly call Oregon their home. The will of the voters that passed Measure 91 did so under the promise that OMMP would not be touched. Thank you, Madam Co-Chairs and committee members, for your time. It is my pleasure and honor to serve Oregon medical marijuana patients. I am grateful for your attention to this matter.
Thank you.
Chair Leininger, Chair Burdick, and committee members, thank you. My name is Russ Belville. I'm the executive director of the Portland chapter of the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, and I have some concerns about both bills, HB 3400 and the Senate Bill 936. And as mentioned by the previous testimony, it did gain in Portland 71% of the vote, and many of those people wouldn't have voted for it if they thought it was going to have a severe change to the medical marijuana program. In particular, the limit of 12 plants in a city setting is very difficult for the patients in Portland. According to the Oregon Health Authority, there are 5,584 patients who are served by grow sites that serve more than two patients. Limiting to 12 plants limits you to two patients. That's 5,000 people that are going to have to be looking possibly on the black market for their medicine. This is like using a hatchet to perform delicate surgery. Furthermore, 56% of the patients on the program, according to Oregon Health Authority, are on food stamps, Oregon Health Plan, or Social Security disability. These are the people least able to be able to adjust to that and buy in a dispensary if they have a dispensary in their location. A lot of places have these moratoriums and bans. Now, there are some portions of 936 that seem promising to me. Getting rid of the 12-inch rule to determine if a plant is immature makes sense. That's as illogical and unscientific as declaring a teenager ready for sex because she's 5'6". Also, the rule that would allow a medical marijuana facility to remain open even if a school moved in next to it seems fair to me. If the medical marijuana facilities have to do a careful search for places that are 1,000 feet from schools, schools should be held to the same standard when they look for a new place to locate. We are at a very crucial juncture right now trying to set a national standard that recreational marijuana and medical marijuana can work in harmony, and what we do here in Oregon will set the precedent for states in 2015 and 2016. I appreciate the committee looking into this and hearing our concerns, and I have written testimony for you if you'd like to look at that further, and we'll be glad to take any questions you might have at Portland Normal. Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Good evening, Madam Co-Chairs and Committee. My name is Gabriel Ariola. I'm here from Multnomah County. I'm a patient grower for our community. The system we have in place provides for many patients. According to the federal government, each patient needs 6 pounds a year of medicine, which for our 70,000 patients is about 420,000 pounds a year. The bills put forth will make it harder for the patients who cannot grow to get their medicine. Most patients cannot grow for themselves. Some don't have the time. They don't live where they can grow, apartments, assisted living, anybody in HUD housing, anything like that. They obviously need their stuff and they cannot grow. Some just don't have the means or want to. Specifically, Senate Bill 936, Section 16, limits the amount of plants we can grow. If anything, we need to hire plant numbers so we can quit wasting our natural resources and our time. It takes a long time to grow a big plant, and when you have these small plant numbers, it should be maybe like canopy size is something that should be looked at instead. The rules, under the rules, currently a 12 by 12 plant, as he was saying, I can do that in 2 weeks. It makes no sense to call a mature plant 2 weeks old. I mean, it just doesn't work out well for growers and patients alike. Thanks again for listening to us.
Thanks very much. So I'm going to make a slight adjustment, recognizing we don't have a fourth chair tucked over there. So I'm going to ask to have come up now Peter Gendron, Megan Wallstatter, and Janice Patton. And then in the next panel, we'll have Rob Bovet, Scott Winkles, and Aaron Purchase. And please start by stating your name for the record and let us know what we should hear.
Hi, my name's Janice Patton. I am an Oregon medical marijuana patient. I appreciate you hearing me today. I'm here to implore you to continue to save my life. I have a rare disease. It takes an enormous amount of cannabis oil per day to keep me alive. It's been this way for a year and a half. It is the only thing known to man to successfully treat what I have. There's a young lady in the audience behind me that has the same disease I have. She chose the only other option, which is brain surgery. She's still having those brain surgeries. She's only 25. She's had five. I chose to take cannabis oil, and I didn't have to have the surgery. It does keep the spinal pressure down, and it is the only thing known to man to do it. It takes a large amount. I myself grow six plants at home. It takes every single bit of those six plants to keep me alive, every bit.
Outside.
If I go without it for 3 days, I'm in the hospital getting a spinal tap, which takes two people to insert the needle because of the scarring that I have in my back from it.
I don't know.
I want to live. I'm here to ask you. I'm here to beg you for my life. To please, when you make these laws, when you pass this, to keep people like me in consideration, in your thoughts, in your mind, when you're making these laws and you're passing this. I really appreciate every single one of you, and that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi. Thank you, Chair Ellinger and Co-Chair Burdick. My name is Megan Wallstatter, and I'm here to testify on behalf of SB 936. I've been an OMMP patient and grower since 2006. My husband is also a patient, and he would not be alive if it wasn't for cannabis and the OMMP. We also own Pure Green, a dispensary in Portland, and we own a small urban family farm. Every day I'm reminded of the benefits of cannabis and the growing need for patients to have access to this particular medicine. We understand the importance of this medicine to patients. We want to protect the grower-patient relationship, and we also want to protect patients without growers. They need dispensaries, and they need dispensaries to be stocked. As a mother, I want to ensure all patients, including children, have safe access to high-quality and tested cannabis. The best way to make sure there is enough medicine is to continue the cart system and to allow OLCC growers to serve medical patients. That is why we want a streamlined program that allows licensees to serve both the recreational and medical markets. We support licensure, background checks, inspections, tracking of products and sales, and paying our taxes. We want to be legal participants in this new industry. This type of regulation does not damage the grower-patient relationship. It does increase safety for patients by ensuring an ample supply of tracked, tested cannabis. It will provide patients with more accountability and transparency from their growers. This type of system would meet the requirements of the Cole memo and help minimize the chances of black market diversion. By contrast, an unregulated, untracked medical program could feed the black market. We all know this is currently happening. The card system is being abused, and I believe creating commercial licenses for medical growers and processors would dramatically reduce black market diversion while ensuring an adequate supply of cannabis. As commercial medical growers, we believe we should be able to own the crop that we produce. This will allow us to confidently invest substantial sums in our businesses, and this type of system will allow us to create the most jobs for Oregonians. I also urge the committee to focus on what I believe is the much larger problem of cities and counties passing punitive taxes and trying to ban our businesses. This, more than anything else, will harm the chance of legal market replacing a black market. And I'm also in support of the preemptive language around medical marijuana tax and hope it's incorporated into whatever legislation progresses.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Good evening, Co-Chairs Burdick and Leininger, members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to speak before you this evening. For the record, my name is Peter Gendron. I'm also known within the cannabis industry as Pioneer Pete or the Omnibudsman. You will hear very specific testimony from patients and producers this evening on a variety of topics. What I would like to present to you tonight is the concept of responsible regulation to foster a burgeoning business and industry. Overregulation specifically will be counterproductive to your stated objectives and also counterproductive to the stated objectives of the Oregon Liquor Control Commission and the implementation of Measure 91. What you're hearing is the request from people to be able to produce, process, and handle both medicinal and recreational products on the scale that you are well aware that we are already capable of doing. What you are looking at is a group of people who are coming before you requesting specifically the legal assistance to do what is already happening in this market. We are asking specifically to be regulated, taxed, and structured in the same fashion as you would find comparable businesses regulated, taxed, and structured. The unique thing about the canna business is the fact that we have a specific plant. I am here to represent Cannabis Sativa L and its cousins, Cannabis Indica and Cannabis Ruderalis, the production, processing, and distribution thereof. Those plants are what is the basis of this business. Everything else we borrow from other business and industry, and as such, we're requesting that our regulations be similar to similar businesses and industry. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, all three of you.
Madam Chair?
Yes, sir.
This is a question for Megan Wallstadler. I'm probably...
Well, that was right, Wallstadler. Yeah.
Thank you very much.
No, thank you.
Are you submitting your testimony in writing?
I can.
Would you please?
Yeah.
Thank
mm-hmm.
you, Madam Chair.
Any other questions for the panel? All right. Thank you all. For everyone, if you have testimony you'd like to submit in writing, we welcome that. And if you didn't bring testimony to submit in writing, that's okay, too. All right. So next up, we have Rob Bovet, Scott Winkles, and Aaron Purchase. And on deck, we have Jennifer Valley, Mike Jenkins, and Dan Kuser.
Madam Co-Chairs and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Rob Bovet, legal counsel for the Association of Oregon Counties. I have submitted written testimony, so I'm going to attempt to summarize a couple of key points in 60 seconds or less if I can. I know. First, to emphasize a couple of things you've heard before, I would say ditto to what you heard from ACLU. I'm happy to work with them on, I share the same concerns with those two sections in 936. Second, I'm kind of partial to 936. However, in 3400, there are a couple of things you probably ought to import. The patient's bill of rights, the seed provisions, probably ought to be imported in 936. Substantively, I would focus your attention on Section 14, which is the new database. We are entering a new paradigm. We're legalizing and regulating recreational marijuana. We are bringing medical marijuana and its supply system into the light. You need, I believe, the assistance of local law enforcement. I think we've heard that loud and clear from OLCC, and I think we're going to hear that from OHA at some point. So we need to carefully consider who should have access to this database and what parts of it. I would posit that it is vital and that you send a strong message to your local law enforcement partners that they be provided access to this database to everything except for individually identifiable patient information, which is not what they need. We need that for two reasons. One, to protect those who are operating lawfully with one of the two regulated systems, and two, to easily identify those who are operating outside the system. Second, just a couple of quick notes about planning issues, just very briefly. In Section 16 of the Act, we have a two-tiered system. Those are in residential urban areas, and those are outside. It's defining those as residentially zoned properties in cities. Counties have those kinds of residential properties, plus we have rural residential properties. We need to include rural residential in the higher limits and intense residential limits in the lower limits. And then finally, in Section 17 of the bill, basically we've redefined the dispensary statute to say that you can't locate dispensaries in residential zones in cities. We need to say the same thing with regard to counties. And I have conveniently crafted amendments to do just that, and they're posted on OLIS. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you.
Madam Co-Chairs, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Scott Winkles, and I represent the League of Oregon Cities. We are appearing in support of Senate Bill 936. We believe 936 brings Oregon quite a bit closer to the robust regulatory structure that the federal government would like to see in terms of marijuana distribution sales. We do, however, have some concerns with aspects of House Bill 34400, specifically the preemptions on the local medical taxation piece contained within that measure. As we have indicated previously, we believe that local law enforcement are going to be integral partners to a healthy marijuana distribution system, and the current revenue distribution formula, cities are projected to receive $2 million a year in the subsequent bienniums to split among all 242. We believe this is going to be quite a bit shy of what's going to be required for that, again, that robust regulatory structure that we are going to have to be successful. With that, I will use the time that Rob said he wasn't going to.
Thank you.
Hi, thank you so much for having me here today. My name is Erin Purchase. I'm with Stony Girl Gardens. I'm also the mother of Oregon pediatric patient Brave Michaela Comstock. I'm here to talk to you about how much medicine it took to make her oil. I treated my daughter for 28 months while she received 6 to 8 chemotherapy drug combination. I did this without delivering a single Tylenol, and she also did not lose a single pound. Under the Oregon Medical Marijuana Program, I'm allowed to produce six plants for her, but I'm also allowed to grow for 4 patients. And I happen to have 3 friendly patients who weren't using their grow cards that allowed me to use theirs for her as well. At 12 plants that I would be limited to, granted she's not on chemo anymore, she doesn't take that much cannabis oil, but at 12 plants, because I live inside city limits, it took me 4 months to produce a harvest. At a half pound per plant, that would produce me 6 pounds of oil, which would or 6 pounds of flour, which would make 180 grams of oil. My daughter, from the ages of 7 to 9 years old, took anywhere from 2 to 3 grams of oil a day, which I needed 360 grams for a 4-month supply. This would be 24 plants at 12 pounds, extracted down to 360 grams. So for my 7-year-old daughter that was fighting cancer, I needed 24 plants every 4 months, and that took all 4 patient cards. So it's already, the standards aren't already enough to produce for cancer patients, adults, let alone children. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Questions for the panel?
All right. It's 10 after. It's clear that we may not be able to get through everyone, so we're going to move quickly. We have Jennifer Valley, Mike Jenkins, and Dan Kuser. And then on deck, we're going to have Peter Shealy, Andrew Nonemacher, and Alyssa Hemperly. Thank you for being here.
Thank you. Good evening, Madam Co-Chairs, members of the committee. My name is Jennifer Valley. I've been a member of the medical marijuana program since 1999. I am the head of Stony Girl Gardens. And in the last 6 months, I have been interviewed by HBO, National Geographic, and I've been working on a documentary about the work that I've been doing over the last 5 years using cannabis oil to cure late-stage cancers like my own. Most of the patients that I work with are patients who saw me on the HBO video about Brave Michaela 2 years ago, as well as patients who are referred to me directly from the Mayo Clinic and OHSU. I have them sign me up as their grower. I grow them their medicine. Many of them come see me, get their medicine, fly home, and I don't see them again because one 90-gram jar of oil is enough to cure many kinds of cancer, including any kind of breast cancer, prostate cancer, and melanoma. If you cut me down to 12 plants, I will not be able to continue to do this work. I just will not have the product available to the patients that I serve. And it's unlikely that I will be able to provide the medicine that I use myself, because I use close to the federal safe amount of 10 ounces a month. I have PTSD. I have radiation poisoning. I still have a lot of symptoms that are left over from 32 years of cancer treatment, and I consume tremendous amounts of cannabis. So I'm asking you, please don't reduce our numbers or the structure that we have in place, because it would really really wipe out my ability to have an impact on our national health care costs. I was able to cure my cancer with less than $2,000 worth of cannabis oil after the state of Oregon had already spent literally millions of dollars, and I want to be able to do that for other patients as well. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
My name is Mike Jenkins. I'm an activist, also a longtime grower. I have a problem with the lowering the plants because I do work with Michaela, people like Michaela, Benton McKenzie, and also myself. I got stage 4 cancer in my throat, pancreas and colon, epileptic, diabetic, post-traumatic stress. I use cannabis to stay alive today. I do 15 grams a day on record to stay alive. If you lower the counts, I'm out. I'm in now, but I'm out if you do that. I want to talk about the kids. You know, I'm out there with the oil with the kids, and if you do the amount there, we can't get the proper medicine into it to make it. I mean, it takes, for my medicine myself, I have to grow 19 different strains to put into my RSO. And when you got the kids and every other person, you have to change. So if you take our seeds away and all that away from us for us producing better product to put into our product, then what are we doing? I mean, you're taking away. Colorado has a rule on their deal that if you have an illness that provides you that you have to have a certain amount, then you have unlimited plants to work with, so you don't have to backpack. You know, and that's the problem that I see is we got all this medicine that we can't produce because we have limits that we can only do so far. That's all I got.
Thank you.
Yes, excuse me. Both Madam Co-Chairs, I'm Dan Kuser out of Eugene, Oregon. I'm the director of the Willamette Valley Normal Chapter. I'm a longtime political activist for re-legalization. I find myself in Salem once again. I made the 120-mile trip, only got 2 minutes to this time, but that's all right. It didn't take me that long to say what I need to say. I worked on the medical marijuana initiative and gathered signatures for it, and as I was doing so, I thought to myself, how could the state of Oregon administer marijuana? I can't even imagine that. I'm sure they don't want anything to do with it, but they had no choice. So after 18 years, as I look back on it, and I see how accurate that was, the state doesn't really want to mess with it, but they had to, and it shows. Some of the egregious things, and one of the most egregious things that the state of Oregon, the legislature, has done was to almost double the fees for the patients. I saw a lot of patients that didn't renew their cards. They couldn't afford it. So they went back on the black market. But then, I guess that's collateral damage. And I look at these measured 936 and 3400. And this is another example of a bill that we're up here fighting for, against, that the law enforcement exaggerates the problem. So now we got to do something about it. So now we come up with ideas that won't work. And my main thing is please don't do something to patients and their growers. Please do something for patient and growers. Drop 936 and 3400. This is typical legislation. It's a solution looking for a problem. Thank you.
Thank you very much. All right, so next up we have...
Chair?
Yes, sir.
If I could.
Oh, please.
Would it be possible to get the names of the physicians at OHSU that referred patients to you?
Absolutely.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions for this panel? All right, so next up we have Andrew Nonnemacher, Alyssa Hemperly, and Peter Shelley. And then on deck we have Chris McAllister, Mike Brells, and Thomas Pamela? Pamelia. Does that ring a bell with anybody? Okay, thank you so much. And I think Peter Shelley is on his way. Welcome. Please give your name for the record.
My name is Andrew Nonnemacher, Executive Director of Compassion Center. We're a nonprofit medical marijuana clinic based in Eugene. The one thing I'll say about these bills is I think it's really about economic incentives in terms of whether growers are going to remain in the medical program or not. So if you do start altering the plant limits, placing regulations on, you definitely are going to see growers either go to the black market or go to the recreational market, which will cut off access for patients. I don't know how you could really get around that particular point. The other issue in terms of SB 936, there's a provision in it that to process marijuana, it seems like at all, the language seems broad to me, to process marijuana at all, you'd need to get a registration for that, and that would include a patient at their home making a tincture, a person at their home making an edible for themselves, which is pretty easy to do and doesn't take specialized experience. So I think that and that should be dropped, that part of SB 936. It's Section 11, Part 3. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Senator Burdick and Senator Leninger in committee. My name is Alyssa Hemperly. I am an OMP patient and work with multiple people that have all kinds of cancers and all kinds of ailments. And last year I was diagnosed with lung cancer, and about a month ago I went back to the doctor and I am cancer-free solely because of medical marijuana. I took about 1 to 3 grams for 6 months, and for a 90-day treatment it takes 4 pounds, and for a year that would be 16 pounds. And with these requirements of the bills, I don't believe that people would be able to obtain medicine that they truly need. And for some people need way more than I do. And at that amount, there is no way that they would be able to obtain that, and about the costly as well. And thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, committee. My name is Paul, not Peter. Oh. We're just missing Mary now. my name is Paul Sheely. I am a patient and medical grower for other patients. I'm not here to discuss limits. I'm here to discuss the will of the people. 53%+ of Oregon voters voted in favor of this bill, and under the impression, the auspice of it being in conjunction with the OMMP, not a takeover thereof. This is morally reprehensible for anybody in a position of bureaucracy or power or authority to go ahead and pass it under the auspice that it would work in conjunction, and then call me crazy for saying that this would happen, and then 6 months later after the vote, go ahead and violate every single promise that was made by the Pro 91 campaign, and go ahead and violate every single agreement that they made that this would not affect the OMMP, even in the very letter of the law that the voters of Oregon voted for. This is just an example of more government bureaucracy that's unnecessary and unwarranted. And this Stephen Marks, he was arrested in 2010 for a DUII. He then became appointed by John Kitzhaber, now disgraced for corruption, to the OLCC.
Mr. Sheely, if you could keep your comments focused on the
I'm focused on, there is no credibility here with this OLCC to take over the OMMP. When this gentleman got a DUI for alcohol, 80 miles an hour in a 55, he should have been arrested for reckless endangerment, and instead he was driven to a Sherry's restaurant. And this guy is not a credible person to run the OLCC, never mind to take over the medical marijuana program. That's my point.
Thank you, all three of you, for coming.
Thank you.
All right. So next up we have Chris McAllister, Mike Beals. Thank you for that. And Thomas Pamelia. And then on deck we have Jeremy Plum, Bob Blake, and Greg Shipp. So I'm going to ask you to try to stay back by about 12 inches from the mics just to catch your voice in its most flattering way. And start by saying your name.
Call someone else on deck besides Greg Shipp. I think he declined.
Oh, okay. Thank you. So the final on deck is Ray Graham, please. And you may begin. Thanks.
Good evening, Madam Co-Chairs. Esteemed legislators. My name is Chris McCaster, for the record. I live in Springfield, Oregon. I am a patient, a caregiver, a grower. I am on the board of directors for the Compassion Center, as well as part of the leadership for the Willamette Valley Normal Chapter, which resurfaced after Measure 91 passed. I am here in support of a modified 3400 and a no for 936. I believe that the modifications that we should consider is the databasing, the uses, the parts, and the environment in which the plant is grown, that to work with some of the proposed task force and board ideas that have been presented to this legislature, to make plan limits reflect intended uses if medical program is to be altered at all. I request as a patient that any directions to the OHA reflect the patient needs and realities at a reasonable pace. If data is collected, may it be used in a serving nature, not a regulating one. A single medical marijuana system is better, in my belief, service to the voters. One of the positives that came from Measure 91 passing last November is that the patients would no longer be associated with shadows or vices in a normalized society. May we work together to make this a reality. If the dispensary program must be shifted, may the committee consider placing it under the OMMP or with the OMMP, with an increased advising from an expanded advisory board of the Advisory Committee for Medical Marijuana, taking regional and medical regional and medical items into consideration. I thank you for your time.
Thank you.
My name is Thomas Familia. I'm from Multnomah County in Portland. I want to thank you guys for hearing us today. There's been a lot of great points already made. I'm a journalistic activist and writer in the subject of cannabis and more specifically medical cannabis. I do not use the term marijuana. Marijuana is ethnofallism. It's laced with racism and xenophobia. Here we're talking about trying to implement a legalization scheme to be an example for the rest of our country, so that Oregon can be a role model for the rest of our country to implement what is essentially a medicine, something that our country can make a lot of money off of, create an economy for, but it is essentially a medicine. People that are in this state are enrolled in a medical cannabis program. We voted for Proposition 91. Had there been any inclination that the OLCC would be trying to regulate parts of our medication, parts of our dispensary system, or parts of our grower-patient relationships, there would have never been a vote in the first place. A wide contingent of our medical community said, do not vote for Measure 91. There's going to be bad things to happen in the future, regulation that you cannot even foresee. There's a whole lot of I told you so getting talked about right now with both of these measures. I cannot support both of these, either one of these measures. On that pamphlet, it asked, you know, which one do you support? There was no box for neither. It was a neutral, but not a neither. There's a tremendous amount of suffering going on in the state. A lot of people that are not enrolled in either one of the program, in a medical program, will not be paying taxes on a recreational product either because it makes it too expensive. We need to think about people who are sick. We need to think about people who are dying. I appreciate all your time today, and thank you everybody else who made comments today.
Thank you.
Yeah. Madam Co-Chair, members of the committee, I appreciate very much the difficulty of what you're trying to do. I would like to introduce myself as Michael Beals. I work with a collective that has grown outdoors this last year, and I'm aware of indoor grows, and the limits that are being put down are going to stop the large collectives like we have. We had a number of people that produced quite a bit of medicine. I myself have made several different kinds of medicine and have helped cure brain cancer and am doing topical things and all kinds of amazing things. I think that making these people that have 24 plants that are grown indoors in the city, cut them down in half when what they're actually doing is helping people that are severely ill. What you're doing is saying, okay, you can only take care of half of these people. So the other half must go find something else. I appreciate what you're trying to do with this bill, but obviously it needs to desperately be reworded because stopping medicine from happening is a real problem. I'm also very concerned about a part of this bill that says something about if any person that's working with medical marijuana has anything over what they're licensed to do, all of a sudden, the law enforcement has the right to come and seize everything instead of just whatever is in excess of what their patients need. I appreciate very much the opportunity to speak. I want to say one more thing. There's going to be a lot of tax revenue generated by this. There's going to be a lot of people that want to spend the money for, pardon me, pork barrel. I think that spending that money for research is extremely needed. Spending that money to help the community, whatever in whatever way, is extremely needed. If I can find someone that wants to champion that, I would be very blessed. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, all three of you, so much. All right, so we have Jeremy Plum, Bob Blake, and is Kevin canceled? Did I say that name before, or is that first iteration? Okay, so this time up we'll have Jeremy Plum, Bob Blake, and Greg Shipp. Did we hear Greg Shipp was not going to participate? Then Ray Graham. Rhea Graham, thank you. Sorry. Wonderful. And so next up we have Kevin Cancel, Larry Braden, and Chris Malott.
Hi, I'm Rhea Graham from Albany, Oregon. I have Albany's Canna Kitchen in Gramsterdam. I process, I make smokeless cannabis remedies, capsules, tincture salve, liniments, suppositories, wonderful products. I think what we really need to do is repeal cannabis prohibition. Get rid of it. I mean, what are we prohibiting this plant for? Unlike alcohol and cigarettes, its use will never make you sick or kill you. It simply cannot. The limits we're wanting to impose here are just going to make it more difficult for patients to afford the plant, and the OMMP's fees are already absurd. We're giving them more than $7 million excess a year from the patients, and the patients are getting no benefit from that. Only the Oregon Health Authority programs are. Okay, it's got nothing to do with medical marijuana or these patients. We need a cannabis commission, not the OLCC. The OLCC can't even keep alcohol out of the kids of the hands of minors. What do they want to do with a plant that can't hurt you? The people voted with the understanding that the OMMP would be untouched. It said it twice in the bill. We were just promised and promised. I still voted no because I didn't believe it, but I didn't get the word to enough people, it seems. The regulation and fees are only going to just make it untouchable for the patients who need it the most, and it's going to make big business rich again. So I have one last question, and I want to know, how many hops plants can I grow, and how much beer can I make at home? Okay?
Fair
Thank
point.
You very much for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi.
Co-Chair Lineger, Co-Chair Burdick, rest of the committee, it's wonderful to be here. Thank you so much for hearing us. My name is Jeremy Plum. I come from Portland, and I have a dispensary called Pharma. We're on Hawthorne. We're doing very advanced patient work. The reality is, I believe 963 is actually one of the best responses I've seen. I'm really in strong support of the bill going forward. I recognize there are many things that are going to be reevaluated on the way, including plant numbers. But what is very important is that as a dispensary right now serving OMMP patients and at a very high level of care with ISO certified lab looking at everything that's going into the patient's hands, with being able to spend an hour with each patient that walks in the door, educating minimum for the starting session, educating people about dosage and titration, how to use different compounds, how to go beyond THC and CBD, how to use this in a very advanced way. We stand at the precipice of a tremendous potential to demonstrate in Oregon what has already been demonstrated in the Israeli medical program. There's a torch that's been lit there. We can turn that into a bonfire here, but we need some support and infrastructure. And the reality is, our dispensary is really well serving the people in our community. I don't think there's one size that fits all, but I feel passionately that as a dispensary, we also be able to have both licenses. We will not be economically viable. We sell a gram of RSO that's 88.8% for $20. We subsidize that heavily. We've made a lot of it, and we're using it in a very sophisticated way, seeing amazing results, tons of heart-rending testimony. But the reality is, we need to be able to serve both populations and to serve the population that is the greatest in need compassionately and affordably. It's of the utmost importance. The patients are what unite us in the OMMP, and I believe that 963 in many ways is a recognition that we have to change. The OMMP CMP has to change because now the OLCC is regulating rec shops, which at one point were primarily dispensaries. We need to be able to go forward, and we have to do so in a timely fashion. Thank you so much for all the hard work.
Thank you.
My name is Bob Blake. I'm from Bend, Oregon. I'm a dispensary owner in Bend. I also own a farm and a grow operation. And I also have an extraction operation where we're making medical extract, much along what Jeremy just discussed. I have a document to share with the committee, and I'll hand it out. My main point tonight is I've spoken to every single member of this committee. You're brilliant. You're really working very hard. I know today was a trying day. Even last week was a trying week. The focus on Bills 936 and 3400, I have some concerns about limiting plant counts. We will figure it out. So my number one recommendation is that we form a work group with the brilliant people who are here every day from the industry trying to work with all of you. We're all willing to do it. And if we could work with your staffers, I think we can figure it out, because I think 90% of the people really agree with it. In terms of plant counts, there's something it's mathematically that you have to understand. You've heard that people take 3 or more grams a day. It's true. I've saved people's lives from cancer. It's amazingly humbling. And if you asked me 2 years ago that I could even do this or think about it, that cannabis, which my kids smoke illegally, you know, in another state, it's crazy. But it does save lives. It does cure cancer. And I'm working on observational studies to cure ALS. Now, it takes 3 to 5 grams. Well, to get 1 pound of marijuana, max will produce 90 grams. And if you're taking 3 grams a day, that's 1 pound a month. So people have to have large grow operations in the medical side, very large. How they get regulated or managed or tracked, I think we can work with you to figure out. But we have to have large farms for the medical side. These patients cannot afford it. The cost of producing this, I want to use crowdfunding to afford it. That's the only way we're going to afford it, because these patients can't afford it. And so medical research, which we're discussing, is also high on the docket. So thank you.
Thank you so much, all three of you. That's great. Any questions? All right. So next up we have Kevin Cancel, Larry Braden, and Chris Malott. And then on deck we have Charles Weller, Ryan Kreilwitz, and Megan. Oh, we just had Megan Wastetler speak before. We're all set with Megan Wastetler, which means Jesse Peter will be next. Thank you. Hi.
Hi. Well,
go ahead. Yeah.
Thank you, co-chairs, Senator Burdick and Representative Leininger, and also Representative Wilson, who I've met before. My name is Larry Braden. I'm an experienced business consultant in both Oregon and Washington, currently specializing in the recreational marijuana business. I'm also a managing broker for Keller Williams. We've heard tons of complex issues, complaints, concerns. The good news is I'm here to offer solutions. I have an experienced team with proven business solutions that currently have clients both in Oregon and Washington and also California that can bring legal operating bank accounts, control systems on the agricultural side, control systems on seed to sale, both on the back end and the front end. We've heard a lot of, like I said, conflicting criteria on the growth standards. But if we have an effective management and control information system, best of breed, best of class, Oregon can become the leading standard in the nation. And that's what I want to do, is offer my knowledge and experience on the solutions we can bring together to help you lead by example.
Great.
Thank you.
Madam Co-Chairs, Senators, Representatives, I appreciate the opportunity to testify again to you today. For those of you that may not recall, my name is Chris Malott, and I'm an experienced entrepreneur with a background in software engineering, and I'm also a medical cannabis grower. I'm a member of the Oregon Cannabis Political Action Committee, and today my company, Fire Holdings, offers products and services spanning technology to cultivation for the medical industry here in Oregon. You're working on truly historic legislation as you consider the complexities of implementing Measure 91. You are facing a great number of challenging and sometimes contentious issues as you work to chart a course to solid, fair, and balanced legislation. It is a difficult task, and I applaud you for your efforts. Today, you're hearing from a great number of folks who are passionate about Oregon's medical program, individuals that honestly and steadfastly believe in the medicinal value of cannabis and assisting in the treatment of a myriad of diseases and ailments where cannabis has demonstrated efficacy. I am passionate about ensuring safe and continued access for the thousands of Oregonians that find relief every day from the novel chemistry that is cannabis. My wife is one of those people. Since the young age of 12, she has suffered from rheumatoid arthritis. The majority of her life has been spent in constant pain with various health complications, and thankfully most folks don't have to contend with those kinds of issues, particularly not at such a young age. Cannabis has substantially benefited the health and well-being of my family tremendously, and it is extremely important to us that the state of Oregon supports a vehicle that ensures safe and continued access to medical marijuana for thousands of Oregonians that need it. It is in that spirit that I would like to offer a few thoughts. And realizing I'm short on time, I'll submit the rest of this in written form. One, you need to ensure safe access for medical cannabis. Ensure tax-free access to medical cannabis for cannabis patients. Limit the potential for illegal cannabis to enter the black market through sound legislative changes. And I'm sure that you will through either HB 3400, SB 936, or a combination of both. Allow patients streamlined access to medical cannabis by allowing licensees to serve both medical and recreational markets. Continue to allow for standalone medical programs that are both fair and balanced and protect the rights of growers and patients, and a number of other items that I would very much like to express, but I'm out of time. Thank you very much.
Thank you both so much for being here. Do you have testimony that you're submitting, or I think you submitted previously?
Yes, I would like to submit this testimony. I have not provided it yet.
Okay, great. Thank you. All right, so we have last call for Kevin Cancel. Is Kevin Cancel around? And then we have Charles Weller, Ryan Krawitz. And if we don't have three seats full after that, then the next person is Jesse Peter. All right, Kevin Cancel. Are either of you Kevin Cancel?
No, ma'am.
All right, then.
Madam Co-Chair, members of the committee, my name is Charles Weller. I'm with Critical Source. We're a CO2 cannabis extraction facility in Eugene in the process of opening up currently. I'm here to talk about 936 and 3400. I'm not necessarily a fan of either one of them. I'd like to see ONMP protected, but I also understand that the Cole Memorandum is sort of pushing it forward at this point in time. It seems as if 936 and 3400... almost split down the middle. The issues that I have with 936, 3400 seems to cover and correct, and vice versa. So neither one of the bills do I support, but combining them, sort of picking and choosing between them, seems like you'd come up with a pretty solid bill. Some good examples, 936 covers dispensaries being grandfathered in. If a school moves in, for instance, they can still hold on to their licensing. Plant counts. I know everyone's gone across it. Something that hasn't really been brought up, it seems really counterintuitive to me that in an area where you have less space, you would also be forced to have less plants. If you don't have as much space to grow in the city, it would make sense that you would want a higher plant count in order to be able to produce as much medicine as you need in a truncated amount of time. So not only are the plant limits not a great idea, they're actually, overall, they're counterintuitive. And besides that, I don't have too much more to say. I really appreciate all the effort y'all are putting in. I think this is really turning out pretty wonderful.
Thank you. Hi.
Co-Chairs Leininger, Co-Chair Burdick, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Jesse Peters. I own and operate Ecopharma Farms, which is a medical marijuana farm that supplies medical marijuana to our patients, and House Bill 3460 medical marijuana dispensaries. We're a small family-run farm that I started with my best friend from high school under great financial burden and are proud to operate within the legal system. I would like to start by saying I come from a life of protecting those who cannot protect themselves. After 20 years as a United States Marine and the past 7 years as a professional firefighter, I feel I speak from a place of experience in regards to integrity and patient care. In regulating growers in order to monitor and track the production and distribution of cannabis, as to adhere to the Cole Memo, we must ensure we create a system that allows for production equality on an annual basis. If not, we could mistakenly limit the quantity needed not only to supply the market, but also to support the growers' financial ability to participate within that market. If we mistakenly create an unequal limiting factor, that we will in turn drive many growers into the black market as they will not be able to sustain under the system that does not allow for production equality between indoor, outdoor, and greenhouse growing methods. It is in the diversity of growing methods that we will sustain the industry as a whole. Logistically, when considering infrastructure and the environment, we mustn't put too much burden on any one discipline to supply the market or the system crashes. Power grids must be able to support a large and small indoor grows. They must be able to support the supplemental lighting that is used in greenhouses. We also need to be able to support the burden that will be put on the land when it comes to outdoor grows. We must create a regulated and tracked system that allows production equality across the different methods of growing, give each grower the ability to maintain full control of their crops beyond harvest until the point of transfer sale. This is a massive undertaking by the committee, and I thank you not only for putting forth the serious effort that this issue requires to ensure success, but also for allowing us to take part in this process in order to preserve its true intent: safe, affordable access for all medical patients in Oregon and the regulation required for the protection of those of us who are trying to make that access possible. Thank you for your time.
Thank you so much. And are you Mr. Krawitz?
No, I'm Charles Weller.
Charles Weller. Okay, right.
Thank you.
Got it. Thank you. Okay, so now we have, if Ryan Krawitz is still around, he is up, and Lindsay Reinhart and Corey Vaden. And then on deck we have Luke McKinney, Matthew Nagel, and Jennifer Valley. Just so you know, we only have about 12 more people, and we will have run through the whole list. So running out of time, but we're also running out of people.
Excellent.
So have we got Ryan Krawitz, Lindsay Reinhart, or Corey Vaden?
Got one of them.
All right, thank you.
It's a far
for stepping briskly forward. All right, and again, while people are settling in, next up we have Luke McKinney, Matthew Nagel, and Jennifer Valley. So, welcome. You may be joined by a third, but why don't you please start? We're trying to get everyone in.
Good evening, committee. My name is Lindsay Reinhart. I'm here from Happy Valley, Oregon. I moved to Oregon for the medical marijuana laws. And I since formed an organization called Undergreen Railroad that takes medical patients from non-medical states and moves them to states that have medical protection for patients that don't have it in their own state. I had to leave my home and everything I knew and loved and cared about for this plant. I picked Oregon. I could have gone anywhere. Idaho is next door. There's plenty of states that I could have gone to. I picked Oregon for its medical marijuana program. I believe in this program. I picked it because I need a lot of medicine. I have aggressive, relapsing, remitting multiple sclerosis. This medicine is my disease's off switch. I was on 22 pills in Idaho. I could feel my kidneys, I could feel my liver, and I often wondered if I would wake up in the morning. I have children. I have a 12-year-old boy and I have a 7-year-old boy. They're adorable. They need their mother. It is scary to take morphine and Vicodin and Klonopin and Percocet and every other drug that they give you and wonder if you will wake up in the morning. I eat a lot of oil. This is my grower. He has to grow a lot of medicine for me. He also grows medicine for my neighbor. He grows medicine for my friends, and he's grown medicine for other people that have testified before you today. And he gives it away to us for free. If you reduce plant limits, he will not be able to do that, and you will force him into the recreational market to sustain the grow that he already has growing. We need growers like Crash Gardens to be able to have high plant limits to afford the medicine that we need, because I cannot afford $20 a day out of a dispensary for my oil. I get my oil for free, and it's very important that I continue to do so, or I'm going to be a zombie on my couch and my children will not have their mother. Thank you.
Is this the microphone right here?
That's not the one you want.
Yeah, there you go.
Is that better?
Yeah. Perfect, thanks. And you could stay back about 12 inches from it. Thanks. Right.
I'm really new to this, so I'm sorry if I don't do it
just
correctly in the
just
beginning.
Just introduce yourself for the record, and whatever you say is fine.
My name is Corey Vaden, and I'm grateful to be here and appreciate you guys listening. I'm here to speak on behalf of the patients that we do take care of currently. And under the bill, just like everybody else, we don't want to turn the patients away. And not only do we take care of just the patients we have, but we also take care of almost double of what our cards are providing. They might not be our patients and grow for them, but we still take care of them. Being a larger facility, we're able to make more medicine and do different things with the medicine to allow for us to be able to donate. That's about it. I just really, really hope that you guys take the patients into consideration. Thank you.
Can I ask a question too? And you don't,
yes,
have to, I don't have to answer if you don't care to answer, but just can you give me a rough idea of how many plants you grow at a time to take care of the type of clientele that you take care of? I mean, you don't have to answer if you don't want to. I'm curious about the size of an operation that would provide the marijuana necessary.
We currently have 37 patients and take care of 20 or more on top of that.
Thank you. Thank you.
Sounds like you're doing some great work.
Thanks.
Okay, thank you. All right, now moving forward, because we really are close to being able to meet everyone's time, Luke McKinney, Matthew Nagel, and Jeremy Williams up now. And on deck, Anthony Johnson, Lucas Littlefield, and Chris Matthews, please.
That's a good question.
Thank you for your patience in being here and waiting around.
Oh, thanks for having us. My name is Luke McKinney. I live in Gresham, Oregon. Up until recently, I was the Bud Master at Canada Daddy's Wellness Center. I now currently represent QCG, or Quality Control Group. I've worked with, over the last 2 years, literally thousands of patients.
Yeah.
Provided them from anywhere from small needs all the way on up to some of the larger consumption levels of the oils and things that you're hearing today. Mainly, I'm here to speak about the fact of we need to maintain or perhaps even raise the level number of plants allowed to be grown. As you've already heard from a lot of the people stated prior, multiple patients equals multiple symptoms. You need multiple strains. I myself am a patient as well. I require 3 and sometimes 4 different strains to cover the different symptoms that I needed for. I also brings up the question of, you know, people who are using medibles, people are using tinctures, people are using these oils. There's a greater concentration there. It's pretty obvious that it's going to take more plants to create that concentrated level in order to provide proper medication levels for people. Also, I don't think those numbers really account for disease or blight or human error that is going to occur in these groves. I also find that a lot of people start out with smaller amounts and find that they need to adjust what they're doing or utilizing. And really, finally, you know, how are these people who now don't have a grower supposed to source those meds? Where is that going to end up? Where are they going to end up with that? And finally, co-oping is a great way for people who cannot necessarily afford their meds to get together and make it more affordable for them. Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Matthew Nigley. Good evening, committee. I'd just like to say that I've been growing medical cannabis for patients for close to 15 years now. Some of us are blessed with skills to provide superior medication. It's not a skill that many people have. It seems a lot of people try, but there's a lot of patients out there that really require the highest level of quality in medication. And you restrict the numbers of what we can have in our co-ops, in our organized co-ops of people. You really just, you're going to put a limit on, honestly, the quality of meds that are going to be provided. You're going to force, I'm sorry. Some of us, you know, we have the desire. We have the desire to help people. I don't make anything off this. And I do this for the good of people. I like it when people can sit down in my house and thank me because they're off their pain meds that were literally taking them down the path of death, and they can live life. You know, I heard some stuff today that really disturbs me. I do this for not-for-profit, and that's what this medical program was supposed to be. It was for not-for-profit. You weren't supposed to make anything. And yet I'm hearing how if I want to continue providing the level of service that I provide for patients, that I am going to be forced into the recreational market. And that's mixing two things that I personally don't mix. I don't mix money, and I don't mix medical cannabis. So you put these limits on us, and you steer us to the direction of recreational market, whether we want to go there or not, and you're going to take away the ability for us to provide the medicine.
Thank you for your testimony. You. Yes, sir.
Hi, my name is Jeremy Williams from Douglas County, Oregon.
Long trip.
Thank you for taking the time to hear my testimony today, co-chairs. Co-vice chairs and members of the committee. My name is Jeremy Williams. As I said, I am a disabled husband and father of three very young children. Can you hear?
Yeah.
If you turn the mic, make sure you record it.
Too close, too far away, yeah. Okay. So, I am a disabled husband and father of three young kids. I have been failed of the workers' comp, the Oregon Health Plan program, and now I am left with taking cannabis as form of medication. In pain management, I was prescribed ungodly amounts of morphine sulfate, ungodly amounts of methadone. I managed to drag myself off of that on my own, without adapt, without any help whatsoever, with a goal in mind to get better. Cannabis helped me do that. I did not take the medicine today because I drove. I wanted to comply, but you can see how much it is really hurting me to do this, so please listen to me. I recently had the opportunity down in Roseburg to attend a marijuana symposium at Douglas County, and some very good points were brought up in that, and I believe I referenced them in my testimony that I emailed. I would add that veterans be taken a closer look at as well, whichever bill. It comes out of your very hard, dedicated work, and I acknowledge that. I ask you to keep the patients in mind. We are disabled. I am advocating for the disabled. Please do not limit the plants. That will take my medicine away and will fail me for the third time. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for being here. Any questions for the witness? All right, we have six more people. Anthony Johnson, Lucas Littlefield, Chris Matthews, and then our final on deck is Joaquin Awila, maybe Bryce Pontry, and Will Feedham. Hi, everyone. Thank you for your persistence in being here late in the evening. Go ahead, sir, and state your name for the record.
My name is Chris Matthews. Co-chair Leininger, co-chair Burdick, members of the committee. I'm a medical marijuana grower. I'm also a patient. When you put these rules in place, when you're limiting to 24 or 48, you're asking me as a grower to choose which of my patients have a more severe condition. I'm not a doctor. I'm not capable of making that decision. If anything, I think that the restrictions should be loosened. I think that our medical program has worked. The federal government has defunded the DEA as long as we're abiding by state law from coming after us. I don't think we're in any jeopardy from the federal government. They're looking for you to make the decisions, and as long as we're following those rules, then we're operating in the area that they're okay with. As far as things, also introducing these bills, you're introducing a 1,000-foot rule for a medical grower. We don't currently have those, and medical growers grow in their homes. Medical growers grow in other locations that can be within 1,000 feet of a school. St. Helens had a case where there was a medical grow facility wanting to open up in between the police station and the fire department. There was a school across the street. It was ruled by the OHA that it was okay because there is no rule against a medical facility being within 1,000 feet of a school. It's not... When you put these rules in place, you're asking to come into people's houses and inspect for something that they've been doing for the last 20 years. It makes no sense.
Thank you.
Anthony Johnson, for the record, Madam Co-Chairs, members of the committee, thank you so much for your time. I know it's a hectic time for us all, and there's never a dull moment in this field. Today, I speak only for myself and personally, and I join in the concerns of the ACLU and Rob Bovet in the privacy concerns. I never thought I'd agree with both of them in the same sentence, but here we are. Strange bedfellows sometimes. And additionally, I completely understand the need for oversight, rules, and regulation, complying with the Cole memo. That is why drafters Measure 91 put the Cole memo into Measure 91. But Cole memo in its parameters doesn't limit the number of plants at any grow site. And I think that the debate around plant numbers really should be switched about patients, because really the medical marijuana program is about patients. And the medical marijuana program has improved the lives of thousands upon thousands of patients who depend upon this medicine, who often have charitable growers who provide for them for little or no cost, who are often subsidized either through dispensaries or other patients who are better off. And that limiting the number of patients that growers can grow for, we're inevitably going to lead to patients losing their access to medicine. And it will fall upon the most vulnerable patients who are battling poverty, who will lose their grower. I've emailed everyone on the committee a document showing the number of grow sites and the patients, and I'm afraid that restricting the number of patients that can be at a grow site could lead to 7 to 12 to even thousands of more patients, over 12,000 patients losing their growers. And so I encourage oversight, reporting, but not to restrict patients' access to medicine. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
I really want to thank all you folks. I know you've been here long, as we have, and intently listening, and that is very, very appreciated. For the record, my name is Lucas Littlefield. I'm a representative of MX Biotech out of Eugene, Oregon. We work with applied cannabis therapy. We, at this point, have worked with over 4,200 OMMP patients in the state of Oregon. The patients that we work with are the end-of-times patients, the refractory patients, those that have no other options, those that have explored the medical marijuana community, dispensaries, growers, and they still can't find solution. Some days are good days, though when they go back and try to find that same subject matter, that same product that gave them a good day, they may not find the same good day. That causes us to ask the question, why? We started to look into the why, and we discovered that there were a lot of thoughts about marijuana that may or may not be true. So we started to explore those thoughts. And one of the things that we looked at right away is dosing. What is a dose of marijuana? At this point, it is yet to be defined. So we decided to explore the dosing. And with dosing, we decided to start with a minimum viable dose. Let's start with the smallest amount possible that causes an effect. And with that, we found that nanograms of cannabis product cause effect. We have found solutions for patients age 4 to 84 with applying nanograms of product. And if you're not familiar with a nanogram, 1,000 nanograms equal 1 milligram. So I'm not here necessarily to speak against recreational use, or definitely not to speak against oversight and regulation. I just wanted to make you folks aware that the science that's being applied right now is finding out some answers to cannabis with applied theory and therapies. So when we are looking at medical marijuana, first of all, it's not medicine yet. It is medicinal. The research is yet to make it to the state. I know there are a few research bills that are making their way up the state house right now. We are supporting them very, very readily. And we would love to apply any of our research to the state to help you folks figure out some of these mysteries within marijuana. So again, I want to really thank you folks for being here today. I know it's been a long day. Thank you very much.
Thank you. All right, people, we have three more people to hear from, and we will have gone all the way through our list. So let's power forward. We've got Joaquin Ahela, I don't know. Please forgive me. And we have Bryce Ponteray and Will Feetham, and we're delighted that you're here. Go ahead.
Hi, I'm Bryce Pontieri. I run and started Sacred Extracts. We do solventless processing. I want to talk to you a little bit about extracts. I think that it's really important to keep, the growers who know what they're doing helping a lot of patients, because if you don't have that, then you're going to have kids, blowing butane in their backyard and blowing up their apartment buildings, because they don't have the money to get the tools they need to make the extracts that they need for their conditions. So I think that in general with cannabis, you should, to keep it efficient and safe and, just good in general, you should let the growers who know what they're doing grow for as many people as they can, because it's not an easy skill and it's often, not cheap to make extracts. So I would encourage you to do that. As far as keeping it within state bounds, I would say keep the taxes reasonable. There's more than enough tax money to go around. But if you make the taxes too high, you'll see, like you did in Washington, there's going to be a huge black market. And if you want to keep the black market down, you'll make more tax money keeping the taxes low. And then there won't be any incentive to, drive it across the country or, put it in the mail to who knows where. That's all.
Hello, my name is Joaquin Ojeda from Salem, Oregon. I'm an independent marketing consultant in Marion, Polk County. I think logically, and I speak in simple terms. I see these two bills as paving the way for Measure 91, and by making changes to OMMP, that goes against the initial intent of Measure 91, which was not to make any changes to OMMP. Now, I understand that dispensaries need to, be regulated if they're going to be going into the regulation side or the recreational side. But by lowering plant counts, it would basically take away the excess from dispensaries. So basically killing their dispensary, to begin with. Also, just the fact that, like he was saying, manufacturing and producing, that does need to be regulated and being safety. But to tell you the truth, this is all just about money. It's all about basically strong-arming growers, making them, forcing them into the recreational side, and not caring about the patient's needs. Now, point-blank, patients will be affected. In any way these things pass, patients will be affected. Growers will be affected. I don't agree with either one of these. I think they need to be rewritten, and I apologize for the writers of the bills, but they both need to be rewritten. You also have to remember that these patients, these growers, these caregivers, they're voters also. I, for one, was one of the people that voted 91 in calling, but I never thought that there would be bills like this that would drastically affect OMMP and basically put lives in danger. And that's basically what these bills are doing, is they're putting lives in danger. Thank you.
My name is Will Feetham, and thank you very much for sitting here all afternoon and listening to us. I started growing medical marijuana 10 years ago when my father was diagnosed with melanoma, and I've seen firsthand the difference that it makes in people's lives. At this point, I live in Jackson County, and I lead a collective grow which serves about 20 patients. And the issues which I would ask you to bring your attention to are, right now the economic model that allows me to do that is that the patients who I care for who are financially well off help subsidize the patients who aren't. If the plant counts are reduced and I'm no longer able to care for all those patients, I would fire or ask the patients who are financially well off to find medicine elsewhere because they can afford to do so, and then the low income patients I could keep providing for them and subsidize them by growing recreational marijuana on my property, so the ability to grow medical and recreational on the same tax lot would help me continue to provide for low-income patients. Also, Jackson County ill-advisedly passed an additional tax measure. It would seriously hinder my ability to continue doing what I'm doing if that isn't addressed. And that's all. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you so much. So I want to thank the committee, and I really want to thank all the people who came here and sat in this room and sat in the other rooms and waited and testified. This was really helpful, and we got through the whole list. Hallelujah. Closing the public hearing on Senate Bill 936 and House Bill 3400. Co-Chair Burdick, would you like to say anything about Wednesday's meeting?
Yes, we will be. Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. We will be taking up Senate Bill 844, the OLCC technical bill that they promised us some answers on some of the questions we had. So we'll be taking that up on Wednesday.
So we're gonna think about and work with all the great input we got. There will be more to come on the bills, you know, more processing and thinking about how to move forward on the bills from today. But next time we're moving to the OLCC technical fix. And with that, thank you for your time. We're adjourning.
Thank you.
We're adjourning.
Thank you.